got more than two stops. Two and half in the situation, two shots. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to OurRadioNetwork.com. Again, that's OurRadioNetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always follow the latest podcast of the different programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:08 here in the city of Philadelphia on the 15th of March, and we're in the Freestyle Friday mode here on Sunday. No guests today. Guests will be back in rotation next Sunday, but we've got a free Sunday here, and the Sunday is yours. So you can give us a call on this open forum Sunday at 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Thank you. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:14 here in the city of Philadelphia. And before we start the program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, considering the state that we're in right now. And I'm hoping everyone is taking very critical and careful care of themselves as we move around in this here new environment that we're it seems to be being created. Speaking of the state of emergency.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from some of our listeners from around the country to see what's going on in their particular cities and towns. I know that certain areas of the country, Ohio and some areas of New York, is basically shut down.
I hear D.C. too, isn't it?
I know the one area in New York got National Guard up there.
Oh, yeah? Oh, okay.
Philadelphia is a little, they've been a little slow to kind of shut things down. I think they finally shut a lot of things down Friday. I'm just curious to see how, you know, how people are faring in other areas of the country. So, you know, we in open forum, so maybe we'll get some calls in tonight in reference to
people recognize this is really a moment where the Time for Awakening platform should be utilized to pull together, because they're trying to make it a global pandemic. So we need all the communication outlets, and they want everybody to stay inside, from each other. So to utilize this platform in this moment, especially, we have to be able to communicate and find out what's going on, because you're not going to hear it all in the newspapers, I presume.
Now, how are you situated? You're going in to place of employment tomorrow, Richard?
Yeah, they're supposed to be. They're trying to get everybody to, work at home.
Okay.
I was one that wasn't up for it, but it may be something that they will just force on everyone, because they want, and especially if the city shuts down. How do you see that, Elliot? I mean, shutting down the whole city. I mean, is that's realistic?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how that works. I know it. I think that area of New Rochelle, New York, where they established martial law and they had the guard out there making sure people not on the street, that all essential business. In fact, they did it. It's a couple counties here in Pennsylvania, here, Delaware County, Montgomery County, where all non-essential businesses is supposed to be closed for the next 2 weeks.
And that's 2 weeks, too.
Yeah. So they haven't done it in Philadelphia yet. I guess we'll see what happens in regards to that. As far as non-essential, it's grocery stores are considered essential, and hospitals would stay open, but all other businesses, restaurants, bars, movie theaters, beauty salons, all the things that they consider non-essential would be closed for the next 2 weeks. If they do that here in Philadelphia, I know they've done it in Montgomery County. In fact, that's why they had to shut down the schools, because a lot of the teachers that was in the Philadelphia school system came from the surrounding counties. And when they told Montgomery County to, to be quarantined or stay home, then a lot of the teachers couldn't come here. So that's why they closed down the school.
And I understand it was like 67 schools that are shut down.
It was initially. Now it's all of them. Yeah,
all of them are?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it was initially 67. But then they Friday, they decided to close them all for 2 weeks. I guess until they see what's going on, or maybe get a handle on things.
I did see people posting and asking to post, like, places for where, because some children, and I think I read or I heard about, and it's one reason New York City was reluctant about shutting down all schools, because some of the children didn't have no home, permanent home, and they were concerned about them getting their breakfast and lunch. So they wanted to have some schools open. But I noticed that in posting, I've seen people posting places where children can get, I guess breakfast and lunch. And I don't know how that works or how that would work when they shut down. Montgomery County is one of those, correct me if I'm wrong, would be one of those somewhat affluent areas, the upper middle income, right?
Well, yeah, it would be. But the only thing is this, Richard, in those comments itself, you could see the racism tinged in those comments, because they didn't say that about Delaware County, Montgomery County, about they need to keep schools open for children, because they need a place to stay and some food to eat. you know, they said that about Philadelphia schools was predominantly black. So, you know, the children come to school for about 6 hours a day. So they need to use the school for lodging and for food to eat. They don't have food at home. You know, I mean, what kind of remarks are those? I know some families are challenged, but all families provide something for their children and a roof over their head if they can.
But you know, Ellie, at the same time, though, it's you know, Philadelphia, and we you know expressed it here on Time for Awakening many times, not just Philadelphia, but with Philadelphia specifically, was that 1 out of 4 families in Philadelphia live below the poverty line.
Yeah,
and I think what 13% of that is even below that. So we're talking about people, and when you mention about race, when it deals with the social economic structure, it is because of race. And I don't care how far back you go generationally, the economic depravity of a large population of black people is because of the racial structure within that's inherent within the American system. But the reality, I mean, the supposedly the statistical reality, there obviously a lot of children who parents or a single parent are struggling to eat or really even find a place to stay. I mean, there's the condition of, I think, didn't we see a report in California where they were testing about taking over those houses in San Francisco, the homeless, you know, because there's so many houses that's just available that the developers are not developing. So I'm wondering, you know, how much that plays into this and how much are we really prepared to service that population if it cares at all? Because it raises another question about getting tested. I don't know if you've seen back and forth about that everybody... Can everybody get tested, you know, or not?
I have no clue. I don't know. I do know that the leadership, as far as in the black community, it's times like this in times of crisis where you need the leadership to step up and give people sound advice, be there to kind of show that not necessarily that you're in control, but that you keep a cool head in a crisis situation. But I haven't seen any black leadership stepping up. I see them looking to white folks for leadership. I do know in our communities, you know, our communities have been traditionally food deserts. So it's tough for people to be able to get to the grocery store. Now, you had a lot of grocery stores that looked like a tornado hit it. I mean, I went to the grocery store this morning because I wanted to kind of get there early. This one store stays open 24 hours. But they said that they was going to close at 11 o'clock to give the store time enough to replenish the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, well, let me go there maybe about 6:15 so I can get there early and you know, get some things.
Right.
When I get there at about 6:20, and I went in there, and now the lot wasn't even half full. But when I went in there, I don't know what the store looked like before they closed. But if they closed down for 8 hours to replenish the shelves, those shelves must have been completely bare. And that's a pretty large supermarket. I mean, you should have seen that place. I said, wow, man. You know, this is crazy.
But it does speak.
But what happens to the people in the communities that can't get to these markets? A lot of these markets are not in the neighborhood, Richard. You know that.
Exactly.
They got to travel to get to the, you know, they've been using these bodegas and all as supermarkets. You go in a place sometime and you see people with all kind of milk, eggs, and all that stuff on the counter.
Right.
I'm saying, like, well, what the hell they, you know, some people are forced to use them places as a supermarket.
It's real. And, I mean, you know, that is, you know, and I always use, I only have one example that I kind of use all the time to express the kind of this here, especially around this food thing, because you know, I hear people talking about the toilet paper towels, and that hand sanitizer, right? Somebody told me that on Amazon, the hand sand, a certain size of the hand sanitizer, one size was $93 and another size was $40-something, you know, the smaller one. But the point that people don't really, you know, how desperate people get when they tell us that, you know, we're in this state now. I ain't never heard that the in my little short life, you know, of this the 65 years, where they're telling us to stay in for 2 weeks. Not that you ain't gonna have no money for 2 weeks. You're not supposed to be moving around outside your home for 2 weeks, which means that you do have to stock up. And if people are purchasing like that, that means that, well, we, you know, they, I maybe I'll be exposing myself, but, you know, we'd be going to the store all every day to fill up, you know, just to eat.
Yeah.
Right. And if they empty, like what you're saying, either more people came from somewhere or everybody was buying a lot because they knew they wasn't going to be able to come back.
Oh yeah. That's what it was. Yeah. Everybody was just buying a lot. And off, yeah, you know, and especially if you got a family, you know, they was loading up two carts. And then some places,
you know, in itself, right?
Fights is breaking out and all that type of stuff over toilet paper and paper towels and all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that story I was saying, because when I think it was here, was that in the 80s, 90s, when the snow went up to like 26 inches or, you know, or higher. I mean, it was so high, it was over my waist at the time. And when they were speaking about that, you know, the storm was coming, I actually seen big guys, you know, take snatching loaf of bread off of the shelves from old ladies. Because it was like down to the end. Mm-hmm. And, it was like, you know, people get a little, you have these images, you know, which is supposedly understandable during Christmas, right? What's they call it? Black Friday. And they got people all lined up, you know, they're rushing there. And they show you, like, people be fighting just to get something off the shelf. Well, these ain't gifts. This is life staples. And we're acting like, so what about if it goes longer than 2 weeks?
Yeah, well. You know, that remains to be seen. You know, we're in times that we never experienced. All of these things let us know that we need all hands on deck when it comes to what we're going to do as a people.
Right.
And we can't hitch our wagon to nobody else. We got to start learning how to coexist among one another, to blend ideas, not I'm gonna take my ball and go home, that type of stuff. And we got to just come closer. These are serious times. I remember when the farmers used to complain that they needed help by the black public, and if they could get some help, if churches would get involved, they could start moving produce back and forth. I remember when when the program first started, when we was on terrestrial radio, we was involved in bringing farmers to the city here in Philadelphia. And we got some community organizations involved and just a couple of churches, all these churches we had here. I do tip my hat to that Deliverance Church, which is a mega church. They got involved and hosted the farmers several times. But, you know, it should have been more of their people out there to avail themselves of the fresh organic produce that was coming up. But, you know, if we network with our farmers, a lot of these things can be avoided, because they would have a market to bring those things to.
Mm. And it's interesting you bring that up, the networking and the, you know, coalescing with each other, because one thing that seems to be coming out of this, you know, around this, you know, what they call a health crisis, is the whole thing of this a new concept, new to me anyway, of social distancing. Yeah, I mean, that you're supposed to be, what, 6 feet from each other? If you do interact, like, in order to protect yourself from being able to get this here, virus. It's not just about cleaning, making sure that you wash your hands and that you touch everything, but you're not even supposed to be close to each other. So on one hand, they want to make sure that we're staying inside our own domains, whatever that may be. And then on another hand, if you do go out, you know, then you're supposed to be 6 feet away from the next person. Doesn't that, that doesn't networking or being close or engaging. I mean, in a physical makes sense, the way they're, how we're supposed to handle and operate with each other. I wonder if that's going to become the new social relationship that we're supposed to be interacting at a distance from each other.
Well, I mean, not sure. Let's see what happens if, you know, if the, I guess the sting runs its course or whatever. I don't know. You know, I'm not a health professional. I'm not going to speculate. You know, you hear a lot of stuff. This was created and things of that nature. You know, I don't know. And even if it was, it's here. And so, you know, the thing is, what do we intend to do, or how do we intend to navigate this situation? You know, I don't know.
I mean, bringing up, you know, as I hear these things, you know, because it gets to as your point, you know, like, well, how are we to handle? Like, right now is not the time to be like, well, who done it? The question is, what are we going to do, and how much do we, you know, lose? I guess it's a value system here, right? Because if we're moving further and further apart, I mean, do we as Africans, as Black people, really need to be moving further and further apart when our situation really requires, as you mentioned, for us to be, you know, in the example with the farmers, moving closer and closer together in far as networking and being able to support and supply each other, especially in moments of crisis. Are we in a position to be able to do that economically, health-wise, financially? Are we any closer to be able to support each other if we're going to be moving further and further apart? And the only thing that we have is, you know, these tools, even though, you know, that is in front of us, can we organize ourselves with these tools? And I'm saying, when I'm saying tools, I'm talking about the communication tools. I think that this is an opportunity to raise these kind of conversations. And then what kind of, as you mentioned, what kind of leadership do we need, you know, to assist us in identifying, like, how do we maximize the resources that we obviously haven't, they haven't, we haven't been able to maximize up to this point? Because if we don't, are we looking at a population, and I know it's speculative, but are we looking at a population decline, and it's going to be considered our fault because our health, because of our station, because we can't be able to take care of ourselves in this crisis, especially when we're asked to be from social distancing further and further apart? It's just interesting, if not frightening.
Yeah, I was just reading in a published report yesterday. One of the strong leaders up there in New York City tested positive, Charles Barron.
Oh, yeah, I seen that.
Tested positive for that corona, COVID-19 or whatever. He said he's going to do all he can to fight it, and I know he will. But, I did see where he tested positive. There was a lot of initial rumors flying all around about Black folks couldn't get it and things of that nature. Right. And you do see a lot of African countries don't. There's 54 countries in Africa, and a lot of them haven't revealed any cases yet. I think Ghana, Kenya, it's a few of the countries that have, as opposed to other nations on the face of the earth. But I think that was a rumor. You can see it was a rumor because black folks have been contracting it, and some, you know, black folks that you have seen in the media,
right,
a couple of
right.
these ball players tested positive.
And you know, it's interesting because one thing that I seen was when we talk about leadership and being able to deal with, you know, how do we deal with a system? Because now I'm a person that uses public transportation, right? So, you know, I definitely, in order to get around unless I walk, I definitely have to, you know, use that system. But then when I looked at, and they talk about how you need to constantly wash your hands. And now I don't, as you say, an article about Rwanda install hand washing facilities at bus stations. Now this is an African country, you know, obviously they, you know, the, and this was Tuesday, they actually the country and started putting in place these hand washing facilities so people can be able to, who don't have, who can't stay environment, so they can be able to have access to be able to wash their hands, which they're saying is one of the, you know, at least one of the preventive measures to use. That seems to me an example of a government initiative that is looking out, you know, under a health crisis and trying to get ahead of being able to provide a public system, hand washing, which so that people can be able to do that. I don't know if they have, now America's supposed to be all this technologically advanced, but you know, and I look at Philadelphia, I don't see no, I don't hear it really. I don't, you know, Elliot, I haven't heard a council person speak to their district or any district about what should be done.
Well, that's what I'm saying about, you know, black leadership haven't said anything, and this is a crisis for their constituents, for black people.
Mm.
I mean, I don't care what these other lawmakers are saying because, to be honest, they're directing things to their own. They could really care less about black folks. You're just here. But, you know, black leadership is supposed to step forth. Any leadership is supposed to step forth in a crisis to guide the people that they're leading through whatever situation they're in. I haven't heard them saying anything. So, you know.
And that's, you know, especially now that.
And a lot of these, and like I was saying before, a lot of these seniors can't get groceries in these neighborhoods.
Right.
And they can't, and they're the ones that are supposed to be the most vulnerable to contract this disease, the seniors. And a lot of these seniors can't get out to these grocery stores. So, you know, where's the leadership? What are they doing? Besides, you look every time you look, one of them done took some money or funneled some properties, you know, benefiting from gentrification and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to say frightening, Elliot, because we have had, you know, these types of circumstances, in history over time, happen for different reasons. I, recently been reading something which I wasn't aware of it, during the, you know, at one point, in the, you know, chattel slavery process, especially after 1808, you know, and you know, I love the 19th century as far as looking for examples, but as far as for how do we deal with reviewing leadership, reviewing strategies and tactics in order to be operating, if not in mind and in our body politics, like free people. But I didn't know around in the 1830s, 1840s that as, you know, after 1808, they didn't import Africans anymore, you know, for this forced labor. They were using Africans who were already here in order to deal with those states with, you know, the commodity, and particularly when New Orleans started to produce sugar cane. You know, they were already producing cotton, and cotton was king as far as the value that planters and merchants and bankers were making, you know, colloquially, bukus of money off of. So they were taking Africans off with the, we're in the northern area, New Jersey, New York, Virginia, and moving them to the south, right? Especially the ones in Virginia who were enslaved Africans, enslaved by law, and moving them to the south, selling them to traders there. And I didn't realize that smallpox was a big contagious disease at that point in time, that a lot of Africans lost their life just moving from Virginia to New Orleans because of the smallpox. And, you know, and I don't know if we realize, I mean, we talk about the native population getting, you know, smallpox in blankets, and we, you know, in Philadelphia, you talk about the yellow fever that came through, and they had the same idea, black people couldn't catch the fever and all that. But how many lost their lives because of the smallpox disease and taking Africans, some enslaved by law and some free by law, but who were captured, you know, because it was a money-making deal, and sold down south and died because of smallpox. So for us, this, you know, just using our history should be a reason why we shouldn't be treating these, you know, amongst ourselves anyway, leadership, taking it lightly, you know, in relationship to how do we deal with our health, how do we deal, you know, our economic circumstance, how do we deal with being resource scarce and in our environment when you're talking about food deserts.
Yeah, let's got a call here on the line. Let's go to 646, are you there?
Greetings, brother. This is Brother Maurice Carver calling you from New York City. How are y'all doing today?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
How you doing now?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I heard y'all talking about Charles Barron. I don't know if you know. Charles Barron is my assembly person. Him and his wife represent my district and stuff. And so, you know, all our best wishes and prayers go out to Charles Barron and the quick recovery. Just to report in on what's going on in New York City, I don't know if you know, but they shut down the school system as of tomorrow. So you're talking about 1.1 million students are going to be out of school as of March 16th. There's no school tomorrow. And they said that the schools will probably not open again until the earliest April 20th.
Okay, yeah, about
before
a month.
That,
okay.
Mayor de Blasio got on TV. He was talking about this. There's 329 cases that have been identified in the city of New York. There have been 5 deaths. The last two, I think he mentioned, it was a brother So a man and a woman, and both of them were 53 and 56 years old with underlying conditions. One had a heart condition. The other one had diabetes.
Wait a minute. So, you said 329 in New York?
There are 329 cases in New York, but 5 deaths that have been confirmed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that is as of today, because he said the numbers are still going up. So there's been contingency plans that have been put in place in terms of what's happening with the schools. The mayor had to deal with the announcement that was made by Governor Cuomo, because Cuomo got on early in the afternoon, and he said that the New York City had to come up with a contingency plan, because when the schools shut down, just like you and Richard were talking about, was that, yo, how do these people get food? And so, you know, the school systems will be open for the kids to get food, and they're launching this thing on the 23rd. They're training teachers this week, but on the 23rd, they're going to be launching this remote school learning. They're going to try, and they're trying to get devices into the hands of the young people and stuff. So I don't know if you know, I love your show, and I listen from New York, and I hope there are a lot of people listening from New York that are listening, and that they will be going to the City of New York's Board of Education's website to find out, you know, where these places are going to be at, where you can get these mobile devices and stuff. And they also supposed to be trying to help people get connectivity. But it speaks to the issue of the things you talked about. Richard, this is one of my biggest concerns and stuff that I'm worried about. Because a lot of times now that you have all of these supermarkets being run on, what is left in the supermarkets for people to purchase? A lot of the food and stuff they're purchasing is all this processed food.
Mm-hmm,
and you
right.
know how terrible that is for us. A lot of the foods that are being donated to these pantries and stuff is a lot of these processed foods and stuff that contains salt and all these chemicals, all
yeah.
different things like that. And this is what's going to be made available to people in our community. And that's, you know, not the fresh stuff that we need, you know, the organic food. So, you know, when you talk about the black farmers, and you already know, Elliot, I love the black farmers. You know, that's one of my issues that we've been pushing for from day one. And it's a shame for the great work that you have been doing in Philadelphia with the connection you were making to black farmers that we weren't able to, because we fought to try to get them up here. We fought, but we couldn't do it because the politicians came together and they decided they were going to make connection with people within the state and from upstate.
Mm-hmm.
So
the same thing happened here.
No,
go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So this is the thing that the two of y'all were saying, and this is a test. Brothers and sisters, you out there listening, this is a test of your politicians. This is life and death we're talking about right now. This is a test of your politicians. And this is a test of not only the Republicans or the Democrats, but whoever else is running out there. And this is for people to get a political understanding that if these people are not doing what they need to do, then you need to organize on a local level and form your own damn parties and stuff. People forget that black people had their own independent parties in the 1800s. Like Richard talked about, he looked at the 1800s. 1800s, there were plenty of political parties that were out there with black people where they were organizing to vote. And we can organize on a local level. If these Negroes don't want to get it done, then we can organize on a local level, get people, you know, raise up people and push them to put them in place to help us in our communities. But this doesn't make any sense at all. You know, I'm thankful that we have Charles Barron and Inez Barron in Brooklyn, and they are leading the way on so many different issues. They are a blessing. I personally know both of them and stuff. And in the 20-something years I've been covering, doing news and doing my show, that they have always been supportive. So my concern is, again, you know, what is out here? Because I will tell you this, Richard. You this is interesting. I went to Aldi's on Friday, right? That's a supermarket mm-hmm. store up here in yeah. New York, and there was no such thing as no social distancing. The place was packed. Every line was packed from front to the back. Front to the back, okay. And people was touching. You know, this one brother, these two brothers were standing in front of me, and the thing that I loved about it was we got into actually a conversation about our culture and how we need to be more trying to impart the wisdom of our ancestors, the wisdom of our history, to the greatness of our history, so that we and I thought just now that some of these kids are staying home, maybe this might be a time around the table that you might actually start teaching them some stuff. If they can't learn it from the school, then maybe this is the time where we can impart some of the wisdom and point them in the right direction toward brothers and sisters who have been out here putting information, good information out there, like Dr. Clark and Dr. Van Sertima, you know, for example, you know, Dr. Binyaka, all those type of things that talk about the greatness of our people and stuff. Because that's what education is, just as important as anything they're teaching in that school. Because when you think about how great, you know, when you hear all these negative things being said about you, Lori Jones on my show said this, and I thought this was wonderful. She said, when you think about all the negative things that they say about our people, and you look at how great we were and still are, that stuff deflects off of you because you know it's not the truth about who you are or where you come from. So we had a conversation in line, and we were talking about that for like, and I was in line for 40 minutes. 40 minutes to get four packages of chicken. 40 yes. minutes. Wow. But it was a great conversation and stuff that we had. And the brother tried to shake my hand, and I gave him an elbow. He said, "I forgot." I said, "I know you did, brother. I know you did."
You know, they won't be. That is so powerful in the understanding on various levels, and I really appreciate what you're saying. Part of being able to recognize that this is an opportunity, not necessarily something that we look at, you know, have to look at the other way around. Because if we can shape the educational program, we are going to be at home. They are going to be using this technology. They're going to have to be able to be socialized differently. And as you gave the example with you and the brother, as far as just even how we're going to interact with each other, we should be leading that discussion, not just listening and letting them tell us how we should be acting. You know, that's so I think that's important.
One of the things that Ellie talked about, and I want to reiterate on this, that I found was frightening. I was talking to my nieces and nephews, and they were online talking about this nonsense about the black people can't get it, and you don't have anything to worry about. Then I'm listening, you know, I was looking at some stuff that they showed me where people are talking about, I'm a hunker down, and I'm getting my weapons together. And, you know, I don't know if you you into this, you know, about this Boogaloo thing, which is with white supremacists talking about this is going to be, you know, where the race war is going to start and all this type of stuff like that in this philosophy. And so people are out here panicking and stuff. And I want people to calm themselves down and to start applying some, you know, common sense to the situation. You can't control what the other man is going to do. You can control yourself. Mm-hmm. And the way you control yourself is with information and with wisdom and understanding about what is going on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely.
And definitely. And this is saying that organizing is something that we can do regardless of the circumstances that we're in, especially to assist in our, you know, our needs in the moment. So I definitely
And let me tell you something. Bernie Sanders, you know, I'm not a Bernie Sanders supporter. I'm going to just tell you that straight up. But he got it right. He got on TV and he said, look, we don't need people to be trying to put people out. The sister, the mayor in Atlanta said, look, you ain't cutting off the water bills for people and stuff like that. We're going to help each other through this whole process and get people mind right. This is a world crisis, a pandemic, but we can make it through if we help each other. And that is the thing. So this government needs to understand, de Blasio, he was complaining because he said, we know the numbers are going to go up. We don't have enough masks. We don't have enough sanitizer. We don't have enough ventilators. I think over in Italy, I think another 350 people died today. Now, that's not, again, that is not for us to panic because that's not the type of people we are. And because of our nature as Africans, and you know, we have the old idea community. We understand that. And so the one thing that we can do that Elliot and Richard were talking about, find people in your community that you know, the older people in your community, the people that might be disabled, that need help or whatever. And if you're going out to pick up some food for them also. Get a little extra for them. Be a blessing to them. Maybe they, you know, the first of the month passed, they might not have the extra money to go out or whatever, or they physically can't do it. So you step in as their brother and sister. This is our family, and we need to take care of it.
Yeah, absolutely right. Hey, Brother Maurice, listen, the last time you was on, you didn't get a chance. I want you to let the folks know when Black Men Screaming can be heard. I mentioned to them the cities that it's in, but let everybody know when, you know, when the show is on, when you can be heard, things of that nature. And plus, we're working out some logistics because I want to get some of the, you know, at least the podcast and all on Time for Awakening Media. But let us know, you know, when the show can be heard and things like that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we air on cable and stuff, and in Manhattan we air every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. We air in Brooklyn, New York from, you know, 5 a.m., 11 a.m., 7 p.m. We air, you know, in Dayton, Ohio, where we air at usually 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning and 10 p.m. on Saturday night. We're airing out in Denver. We air on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. and then on Saturdays from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. out in San Francisco and stuff. We air. Well, I'm gonna tell you. I mean, San Francisco got it. You know, the name of my show is Black Men Screaming, and people ask the question of why would you name it that? That is always the first question out of people's mouth. And I say, well, what happens when people scream? What makes a person scream? People scream to be heard, and there has to be a condition that you're in that you need to be screaming about, right? So common sense will tell you if someone is screaming and there's a need that's out there. And so Black Men Screaming has been on the air since 1998 and coming up on 22 years of trying to be out there to develop and to push forward critical thinking skills for people to be able to be proactive in their own lives. And like I tell people, when I was looking at some of the situations that was going on, I said, you know, people need to be proactive in saving their own damn life. I'm not waiting for somebody to save me. You know, you have to recognize what the situation is. And again, we have to pull together as a family. You know, I'd love for you to come on and watch the show and, you know, respond to us and let us know what's going on with you. We definitely, you know, Richard, I'm sorry. I just wanted to digress to something you said, because you when you were talking about Oakland and those sisters taking over those houses out there, those black sisters that were trying to, you know, because they're being displaced from that particular neighborhood. And think about how terrible that is, because guess what what neighborhood that is? That's the neighborhood where the Black Panthers came from. That's the neighborhood where the Black Panthers were born. And now it's being gentrified. Yeah. Think about how horrific that is.
Right. Same thing here in North Philly, where the Panthers were, and Cecil Moore with the old civil rights, and people, you know, you'll have the generation talking about, you know, the mark, you know, that school, you know, and the fight that they had, and Reverend Sullivan, you know, who was able to build the mall. And look at it now, and it's totally gentrified.
Totally different, yeah.
Or being gentrified.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I'm sorry. Go ahead, brother.
And it just shows to the point that you're, and I'm glad to hear that you've been operating that long and screaming and that long so that people can hear us. But it just shows how important it is for us to really continue to try to emphasize the tactics and strategies we need to, you know, because this is a different generation than theirs. And here those women are coming up with strategies like they're going to just take those houses. Well, that I'm looking at when we're talking about this education, because in Philadelphia, I think the number is 67% of the young people that go to school come out functionally illiterate, mm-hmm. cannot read. So here we're now, they're forcing us to just tele-learning. What, you know, and because I'm using this example, but said this is comes the opportunity not just to be able to in your neighborhood to be able to assist older people, but to assist younger people in getting the skills we need so that they will be able to be the future organizers of their life in the future. Other than that,
yes,
something else.
You know. Understanding our history again is so important. And, you know, I was in a debate, you know, with some young people on live TV. And I remember this young sister said to me, she said, it's your fault. It's your generation. It's your fault that the world it is the way it is. And I thought about that for a second. And I was like, okay, do you live at home? She's like, yeah, you living with your parents, right? Yeah. You graduated from school, but you couldn't find a job. Right. The generation that helped you get to school, that helped pay for you to go to school, that's feeding you now and taking mm-hmm. care of you now, we the one that caused the problem. This, right. You know, and so I asked, I was talking to somebody and I asked a question. I said, do people remember what happened in history maybe this week? There's two things that happened recently this week that is very important. And I think about Brother Ntume, because he came on and did the show with us, and he told me one time, he said that the engine of any movement is young people. And I would come in agreement with that, because back, I think, 50-something years ago, these group of students in Atlanta got together, right. And they formed they wrote a document, and it was called the Document on Human Rights. And they pushed the issue and stuff. And if you look at that document, you go online and you read it, all of the same issues that we're dealing with now, they talked about back then. But they right. didn't sit on their laurels. They organized and said that they are going to do something to make a difference. Something else happened 60 years ago that, you know, that people are not remembering and stuff, because we always keep hearing about the Montgomery bus boycott. And that was a great thing. But that was not where they got the idea from. It came from New Orleans. It came from New Orleans. Or I think it was Pastor R.T. Jameson or whatever, when they struck against the bus company down there. Mm-hmm. because of the 80% of the people that rode the bus were black and stuff, but they couldn't sit down in the front of the bus even if the seats was open. And so, I mean, we look at these things, and when people tell me that, you know, our generation is the one that messed up stuff, our generation is the reason why you can walk around and talk the nonsense you're talking, because we put the hard work in. You know, we put the hard work in and stuff. And I don't want to discourage people, young people. I'm trying to encourage you to know the power that you have. That power doesn't come just from you. That comes from generations of brothers and sisters that decided to stand up, to say that I had enough already, and we want to change our condition. So this is an opportunity also for you young people, now that you're going to be home, not to do any destructive stuff, but to start talking to each other, to start organizing, and look how you can fill the gaps in your particular communities to be proactive and to make a difference.
That's true.
I'm sorry. I don't want to take over your show. I apologize.
Maurice, you know I'm going to be in touch with you, man.
Okay, I'm getting off the line, brother. God bless.
We'll talk soon. Peace now.
Peace now. Thank you.
Let's go to 602. 602.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Brother Marcus here.
Hey, sir.
Yeah, yes, sir.
All right, good brothers. Well, you say you don't want to play the blame game, but I'm going to blame somebody. I'm going to blame. You know who I'm going to blame? Because all of a sudden, this thing just pop up out of the blue. You know what I'm saying? It just popped up out of the blue when we trying to make our move into Africa and you know, the Chinese is doing his thing. All of a sudden, he's come and destroyed those people's economy. And, you know, now we're talking about, look, these people, you're dealing with Machiavelli. You see what I'm saying? These people are Machiavelli. They don't care. They'll destroy their own people to maintain power. But I am convinced that we will survive. We as African people will survive. You see how it's destroying them? Because now Europe is the epicenter of that stuff now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised when Trump went on TV and said, oh, I got to stop traffic from Europe. So they said, oh, it's coming in through Europe because it done traveled all its way across to Europe and then springboard right into... So he had to stop them. Because I was wondering, if this thing is being spread by Chinese, the first place it would jump off would be New York or San Francisco, because they would have like a Chinese. And it didn't jump off there. It jumped off in Seattle. You see? So is white people when you're here. You see? So, you know, but I am convinced, as I said, that we have to be careful with this thing, you know, because they could use this as a premise to quarantine us.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? They could use this as a, well, you know what? Oh, we have to quarantine the entire city. We have to quarantine Detroit. We have to quarantine Memphis. You know what I'm saying? So we got to be careful with this thing. You know, we don't know. This is something that just, look, the brother in New York, all of a sudden, he got it. Who knows if he got it? They made us want to you got
Trump
it.
Didn't get it. And he was shaking hands with the person from Brazil who got
exactly.
It.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? So these people are liars. They're liars and killers. So we have to watch them people. You know, we have to really, really watch them and you know, do what we have to do, defend ourselves. See? Get our own remedy. You say, I don't want to go to him for the remedy. He might kill me. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He might give you an injection and kill you. You see? Are we dealing with Machiavelli here? The same person who put it out, come and say, oh, you know, I got the remedy for it and I got the cure. You know, so this is in a very, very
$8 billion was supposed to allow. Out of that first $8 billion was supposed to be going to companies to come up with the cure because they don't have it. So, I mean, you know, like it ain't like that $8 billion was, they had to force, if I'm not mistaken, force to say that everybody can get tested, but the money was already distributed. I don't know what this next round of money is going to be for, but and they still don't have the testing. But the cure, go to the, and that means somebody going to produce it, patent it, sell it.
Yep. But from what I read, what they said, that no, they're going to put, everybody can get Medicaid. These are illegals, everybody, because this thing done spread. So now they said, all right, everybody get covered through Medicaid, right. Even illegal. Everybody know, they said, food stamps, you ain't got to declare your income now to get food stamps. See? So they open it up to, you know, so everybody can go get food stamps and medical. But it took a devastation for them to do that. It took so out of something bad, some people gonna get a little bit of benefit, you know. But I tell you, if you look at what's going on in Europe, if they don't get a handle on this thing, a lot of people won't die.
Oh yeah, that, well yeah, they know it.
Yeah, if they don't get a handle on this thing, a whole lot of people going to die. So
and you know, Brother Marcus, that's why they did that. You know, we can entertain a lot of different things about where it came from and the origin and things like that. But when you've seen these folks shut down their sports teams, yep, their entertainment venues, the market was crashing. See, oh, that's serious. And when I say that's serious, he wouldn't have done that. Money is Europeans' God. They love money. So whenever it's something that's going to infringe on those billions of dollars, because you're talking about billions of dollars, that tournament, that the March tournament, those, that's billions of dollars. When they had to shut those things down for a month, you know that this is serious. And they're going to try to get a handle on it. So,
yeah,
you know, we don't want to be left in the lurch just watching. We need to be doing something, exactly, talking with one another, making some plan. That's why it was important a couple of weeks ago when the sister was on talking about that they were going around to the churches, temples, mosques, black social organizations, talking about the need to seriously discuss separation. Yeah. That's why that those conversations is important. This is why.
Yep. Well, you see, as you say, separate. We better separate.
Well, I mean, it's kind of ironic that this thing didn't happen.
Yes. It is.
And one of the major places to start the separation is the separation of the mind. We have to think differently than what they're telling us the way we have to think, and be able to, you know, to be able to come up with critical thinking through and understand how do we, in this new environment, I mean, you know, to be able to come up with new solutions for our problem, our circumstances, and come out of it where we don't have such a high unemployment rate, where we don't have such a high health problem, when we don't have such a high illiteracy rate. I mean, after enslavement, those things were handled. They built hospitals.
Yes.
Black people built hospitals, built schools. And they were supposed to be the most illiterate on the planet at that time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's, you know, I think that, you know, this is, you know, the moment to like to speak to that we can do this and use this opportunity, because like you said, they, Elliot and Marcus, they obviously was afraid. They pumped $1 trillion to the banks, mm-hmm, on the side.
Mm-hmm.
$1 trillion. Yep. First, they lowered the rate for them to borrow the money.
Yep, to zero. Mm-hmm.
Right? And then they gave them, the feds opened up $1 trillion in. So something going on.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Well, I just want to leave you with this here, with Marcus Garvey's statement. He said, when all else fail to organize the people, conditions will. And these are the conditions right now. Because we better get our act together, otherwise we, you know, a lot of us won't be, you know, in that line going to the mark. Anyway, good brother, you take care, and thank you so much for this program. Keep on keeping on.
Thank you, Brother Marcus.
All right.
Please.
Yeah, take care now.
Richard, you know, it's I want to read a couple articles here just briefly. You know, it's kind of funny. I'm going to take a break in a minute, but let me mention this before we take a break. I think it was last week when I read those articles and they were talking about black voters' participation, if you remember, Richard, and it says how black,
right.
Black voters equate morality with righteousness or religion. You remember that? The overwhelming majority equate morality with religion and the Bible as far as when they look for a candidate. You remember that? And it says that whites, over 90% of whites don't see morality as an impediment or something like that, or see morality different. I was trying to pull that back up. But you remember that when I read that?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I do.
Well, let me read this because this is dated March 14th. It says, survey, white evangelicals see Trump as honest and morally upstanding. White evangelicals in the United States, the core of Donald Trump's political base, have far more positive views of his personal conduct and character than other U.S. adults. Nearly to 2-to-1 margin, white evangelicals are more likely than other, now notice it says more likely than other Americans to say the term morally upstanding and honest when they describe Donald Trump. According to a new survey by Pew Research Center, the evangelical assessment does come with some reservations. Only 15% of white evangelicals, for example, say morally upstanding or very well, while another 45% say the term applies to Trump. Two-thirds of U.S. adults as a whole say the characterization fits him not too well or not at all. The evangelical view of Trump stands out not because of its divergence from the broader U.S. opinion, but by its apparent disconnect from conventional standards. Almost two-thirds of white evangelicals see Trump as at least somewhat religious, despite his profanity and sporadic church attendance and his evident unfamiliarity with the Bible. 63% of white evangelicals believe they're on the winning side. Well, okay, I'm not going that far now. But you notice how it says that overwhelming majority of white evangelicals see Trump as honest and morally upstanding. So
right.
That kind of, you know, listen, when they did that, 68, when they did that assessment, it says you have two nations in this country. It's the same. The mindset is still the same. Our people are confused on a lot of issues. They've been falling behind Europeans in almost everything they do. But the core values and the core understanding is still divergently, is diametrically opposed.
And that's one reason why, you know, and these terms come and they have some reference in my mind. But they may, to the audience, they may have to, I might have to at some point, you know, define them. But when I look, you know, when brother young people, and he was saying, he was showing the 50s and then, you know, the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, what those young people did, I seen them, you know, I put them as the vanguard. You know, they were they were the adventurers. They took the risk. They recognized what was needed to do in order to show that there is a different value system, that we didn't have to live and act the way that the dominant society and their value, because, you know, to them, enslaving and brutalizing someone as you're going to church, the okay thing. And that goes to your point, you know, what you read in that article. I think it was that, you know, white folks seeing that morality and behavior, there doesn't have to be a ness to it. You can, you don't have to be, to do something, you don't have to be morally connected to what you do. And what reason why I'm saying this, because, and from the point of the Vanguard, a small group of people have to realize that we have to, the ones that have to take that, put and you create a structure where we can be able to operate on our own, out of our own agency, recognizing that that's a problem for somebody else. And we only want to do it because we want to do what is righteous and just for ourselves. And we think that that would be righteous and just for everybody. Well, that small group will have to realize that we have to do that again. Because the larger Black populations may not see that what you were describing, the conflict that white people have, white society had, white systems had, that it can do something dastardly to somebody, like have people not have. I mean, they had to fight to get that. For this here virus, they weren't going to give everybody the access even to get tested until, and I think, you know, Brother Marcus, until they seen how many white people were coming up with being tested positive for the virus.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean? I mean, so, you know, you would think right off the bat, they would do something, I mean, out of their own, you know, especially when you talk about the evangelicals who are supposed to be holier than thou, right? But it shows, I think the same statistic shows, Black people participate in church and going and have a belief in God in higher numbers percentage-wise than even whites.
Mm-hmm.
So that don't mean anything of their professing to be evangelical of what they will do, because it was a lot of churchgoers that were hand people, and I'm one to just think that that's to show what we're dealing with. It's not to show how bad somebody is. It's to show what we have to do to protect ourselves each generation and each moment. And raised there is just saying, you know, in those two different things that there's another example of why.
Yeah, and the critical question, you know, that Black folks need to ask themselves, if that's the case, and overwhelming majority of white evangelicals believe that this man is moral and upstanding, then what are they basing that on? What are they basing their belief in morality on? Black folks always run around and claim that these people are all brothers, we all God's children, the blood runs, we have the same blood running through my veins, you know, all those cliches. But if they believe that, then what are they basing their belief and morality on? It's got to be different than what Black folks are basing their morality and belief on. It's got to be different. When you start asking yourself the critical questions, then some of this stuff and these fables and other things that these religious fables and soothsaying, we'd stop doing these things and start operating on a different paradigm. I'm going to take a little brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We got a couple of callers on hold, and we'll go right to them after the break. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We're in open forum. It's 8:19, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind if our people could if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I say that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back. It's time for an awakening. It's 8:30 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in open forum, a rare Sunday open forum here on Time for an Awakening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Got two calls. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to 404. 404.
Hey, peace and blessings, my brothers. How y'all doing? Y'all hear me?
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm still learning. It's a beautiful, Elliot and Richard, man. Check this out, man. It's a beautiful time for us black people on this planet, man. It's going to be a black planet, okay? Look at here. A white man heaven is a black man hell. So conversely, you flip it over, a white man hell is a black man heaven, okay? All right, so y'all look at this time, man. It's our time, bro. Okay, say all that stuff we were thinking and doing in 2019 ain't gonna work. Right? Okay, this stuff speeding up. I got the patent number for that virus, by the way. But the shit backfired on these devils. All right? It backfired. Everything they gonna do now is backfired on them. Whatever they try to take us out, they taking themselves out, man. Okay? I.e., it's so much opportunity now for us. Okay, look at for black women. I'm just for black women. Okay, you used to see all these black folks, women going to these Chinese women to get their nails done, right? Now, since this thing done bust loose, it's a nail shop over here at this Walmart where I go to. And we see no black women in there now. All I saw were two Mexicans. So what sisters should do is start their own nail shop, man. Okay, and you said something about this, the Chinese folks opened up a barber shop across the street from you. Now, how many Negroes you seen going in there, Elliot?
Well, no, I wasn't across the street, but no, they're here in the city of Philadelphia. But go ahead.
I guarantee you, them Negroes still going in there with them Chinese with this thing up bust loose, they deserve to be taken out, man. Okay, they should be coming back to you. Okay, bringing their business right back to home. It's separation time. That's what the universe is telling us. It's separation time, okay? And we just trying to separate from them devils, man. Because y'all go, especially all these black women that laid up with them devils, Serena them and all them, bro, they going to catch that shit too. All right? And so all we got to do is sit back. The universe is separating us, man. We can't do what they do, eating that hog and that pig and all that filthy, scripted stuff. Bro, the universe is separating, okay? And then I heard the reprogram of the black farmers. Okay, I was thinking, I should have said this back then when you had them on there. The black farmer should have started up GoFundMe account, a GoFundMe, and then they could have got us to put the money in, man. So if you just contact them black farmers that's having problems, just get them to set up a GoFundMe account, man, so we can start funding our own people, man. Okay, I didn't think about it at that time when you had them on, but it's a beautiful time to be alive, man. Oh, yeah, my man.
Well, they didn't necessarily need to go fund me. They just needed the markets set up where they could to avail for their produce. They just needed people to come together and set up markets. But like the brother mentioned out of New York, and I know from personal experience here that when we were trying to set up markets for them to sell the produce, mm-hmm. we got kickback and pushback from black politicians who could have helped make the area smoother so the farmers could sell their produce. But they would rather help Amish, white Amish from central Pennsylvania, than help their own farmers. No, they've always been an impediment to a lot of things that black folks tried to do. The black politician, they've been a historical impediment.
So we must not vote for them black same Negro politicians, man. Okay, that's how you got to do. You got to don't pay them no attention. Just vote them out. Select some more candidates like you and Richard, Ralph, Germantown Joe. Pee Wee Herman is down by the
Pee Wee Herman.
Put
Pee Wee Herman with them.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm saying. Well, anybody from the hood.
I'll let Germantown Joe know that you want him to run for office.
Yeah, man, because I heard, hey, check this out. My man Germantown Joe, hope he on the line, man. I heard him on the that Word Network show, WRD. I don't know if I called name.
Oh, the Word Network?
On you that radio station up there.
Okay, I know what you mean.
But man, Joe said all them old Negroes that voted for Biden, he cut them up, man. He see, he blamed the old people, and he pissed them off on that channel, man, on that show. But our ancestors, they did the best they could, man. I'm gonna put it this way: they with what they had, the circumstances they had, they did the best they could, man. Now, I'm not pointing my fingers at no black people, because that's enough of that going on. Now it's time for us to come together, man.
Yeah, you're okay? Right.
I'm not arguing with no black women, no black men. All us brothers and sisters, okay? Even the ones that I talked to from Jamaica or Africa, when they start talking about that tribalism, I say, look, man, all us black. So this damn near tribalism stuff, where you from there, I'm from there, all of us get to the hell, okay? And I got a good idea. If the police stop either one of y'all, all you got to do is start coughing on their ass. I guarantee you that's your man.
That ain't right.
Yes, sir, man. Right. You got to use you got to benefit and use what the enemy give you against their ass, man. It's out of wall. So next, I should have thought about that when I got a ticket like last week. I should have just bust that coffee, man. My old lady told me that's what I should have done, man. So, hey, bro. This is a good time for us to be alive, man. Y'all let some other brother talk or sister, whoever on the line. I yield my time to the family. Peace and blessings. It's our time. The universe is separate, killing all them devils. They starting out with the oldest one. Them old crackers that created all this hell for us, they taking out first. All right? That's how it's working. So peace and blessings, y'all. We going to get our reparation one by one. The universe telling is getting ready to be a black planet, y'all. So I yield my time to the family. I love y'all.
Peace.
You know. That's a new weapon. I don't even think about it.
Start coughing.
Pull my mask off and stop. I ain't mean that.
Let's go
it's a point.
Let's go to 215. 215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all brothers doing tonight?
Oh, right. How are you, Councilman?
Brother West, I appreciate you. Public office, but I doubt it that ever be in my agenda, because I do enough just voting in this corrupt system. I doubt if I ever be part of it. I appreciate it, Brother West. But Brother West was referring to my call on the terrestrial station, and when I said that, Brother Elliot Richard, let me say this: I wasn't so much getting on our older blacks, because I know they was misled. See, like Mary Mason always say, Elliot and Richard, our people need to start keeping a scorecard. We got to become politically astute and politically informed. I was blaming Negroes like James Clyburn and others of his ilk for misleading our elderly blacks. I said, because if it weren't for elderly blacks in South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Alabama, that filthy bigot from Delaware, the former vice president, his candidacy would be dead right now. We kept his candidacy afloat. And it is typical of what Brother Malcolm say. We put them first, they put us last. Joe Biden got no intentions on helping black people. And what shocked me, Ellen Richard, on the radio station here in Philadelphia, terrestrial station yesterday, Dr. Mecca, who won the host on there, he usually tout a company line. He actually shocked me yesterday. He said, look, and I know he's not going to get, I know the management of WRD is not going to be happy with his comments. He said, look, he said, I'm going to tell you straight up. He says, it's not about whether I vote for Biden or not. He said, but I can tell you right off the bat, I don't expect Joe Biden to do a damn thing for black people. And I said, Dr. Mecca, are you serious? He said, yes, that's the way I feel. I said, Dr. Mecca, you know your comments is not what the station want to hear. He said, well, that's the way I feel. That's my opinion. He said, well, Dr. Mecca, you're absolutely right what you said, because Joe Biden is no friend of black people. I said, in the final call, I told him in the final call issue just came out, they said that these older blacks, they voted for Joe Biden. They voting against their best interest because Joe Biden, he tried, like I said, for when he was VP and he's as a senator, he been itching with his Republican cohorts to go after people's Social Security. And since a lot of our people on Social Security, whether it's on SSI, and most of it, like you said, and Brother Marie said last week, on SI, some of the, a lot, another seminar on regular Social Security and stuff like that. But the point is that this guy got an itch in his giddy up on going after Social Security. It's going to have a devastating effect on our people and stuff like that. So black people, once again, they keep being misled, voting for people like Joe Biden, who has a racist, vile history against black people. But yet, because of Negroes like James Clyburn, they got our people so ignorant to think that Joe Biden is some kind of friend of black people. And stop me. It's a sin and a shame to the creator. So that's where most of my anger was more directed towards Clyburn and these other establishment Negroes, if you will, that keep misleading our people, both for people like Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and people like that. That's where my anger was more or less, you know, directed at and stuff. But
you know what? Let me say something in reference to what you just said.
Sure.
Because, sure, the average Joe public, and I'm talking about black public, mm-hmm. they bear some responsibility because they need to educate themselves on what these guys are doing or not doing.
Right.
But this misleadership class holds a huge responsibility because they put themselves out as leaders. And when you got black media outlets that put themselves out as the voice of the community, where the community goes to hear information, where the community goes to supposedly hear people that want to help the community, they got a responsibility to put out accurate information and just don't take money. I remember when the Bloomberg was running, he was throwing out money to the black media.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't wait. To some of the black media you're talking about was playing Bloomberg commercials.
That's correct.
We had one of our favorite callers that calls out of New York saying that Scotty Reed need to take the money. You know,
right.
We got to have principles to what we're doing. You
That's
just
correct.
Can't be just open to take money from anybody or anything. Now, when Bloomberg bowed out of the race, he dedicated all his resources to help Biden.
That's correct.
So that means all the money that he put out for his campaign ads will switch over to Biden. Biden will benefit now from that. So
That's
those
correct.
Same black stations will be running Biden ads. Now, I looked at yesterday, Paris Dinard. He's over Trump's black media outlet or outreach.
That's correct.
So he's going to be going around with dollars to black media to siphon off, because all they need to do is siphon off a couple percentage. It ain't like he need a lot of black support.
That's a good point.
I think he won last time with 8% of the black vote.
Mm-hmm. About right. Mm-hmm.
All he needs is a couple percentage points, 10%.
Yep.
That's all he need. It ain't like he need millions of blacks to vote for him. He probably don't want millions of blacks to vote for him. All he needs is a couple ones to switch over. No, I'm just saying.
Right. No, you're right.
So we can't put ourselves out like that. Oh, I'll take the money. Come on. Where's your principles? Where's your values?
Exactly. that. Because Ellie, that's the same justification black drug dealers, they sell that poison, they try to justify it too. Well, I'm only doing to feed my family. And I'm saying to myself, well, how I got to feed my family too, but I'm not selling dope to our people to feed my family. I'm black like you, and I'm catching the same hell you catching. I'm driving wild black, walking wild black just like you, so you ain't no different than me. I'm not here selling poison to our people. You know, you can always try to justify your wrongdoing or your unprincipled. You can try to find any kind of way to justify it. And you can, if you want to do that and convince yourself, then that's something that you got to live with that. But if you want to stand on what's right and what's wrong, then you stand up like a man and straighten up your back like a man and woman. Be straight up about things, you know. So I'm with you on that, Brother Elliot. Straight up, bro. I'm with you on that.
Now, Brother Otis just put in the chat room here that, that Trump expects to get 20%. Of the black vote this time.
Wow.
And it says the experts say that the so-called political experts say he'll get 15%. Now, like I said before, if I'm not mistaken, he got 8% of the vote when he won that last time.
Right. That's correct.
So he gonna, the experts say that he gonna almost double his support among black folks.
Wow. Well, if he get anything close to that, he's definitely back in office again for 4 years. No doubt about that. You know, but you know, Brother Elliot, you know, when Brother Richard was saying just now about how white people are, and I think Brother West kind of alluded to it too, when things affect them, how they put it, just like you look at this opioid crisis, as you and Richard, who are two well-learned brothers, know, when it was just poor black men and women in the hood getting hooked on crack babies being born, you know, black sisters selling their bodies for $2 to get crack, and brothers stealing stuff out their households to support their crack habit. They was criminalized and demonized by white media, white law enforcement. Thought that, you know, it was the war, so-called war on drugs, which, you know, is a war on black people. They threw brothers in jail at inordinate sentences and stuff like that. Now that you got all these white kids in the suburbs now, in places like here in Philadelphia, in Kensington, Fishtown, you go up there to the K&A, you see white men and white women walking around looking like zombies, defecating all over the place, urinating and stuff, you know, shooting up needles, everything. It's all of a sudden sympathy for them. You know, it's a health crisis now, but when it's our people, lock the niggas up, but now it's them. It's a feel good. You got a feel for them. And here's the kicker, Ellen Richard. If this don't show our people that these people don't give a damn about our humanity, you got white Democrats as well as white Republicans now in a bipartisan way trying to get people, white folks that's hooked on drugs now. Guess what they try to call it, Ellen Richard? I don't know if y'all been paying attention to this. They said it should be called a they should be supported under the American Disabilities Act. Now, I'm saying to myself, all these black folks that got hooked on drugs and destroyed their families and did all kinds of stuff when they hooked on that poison, I never seen none of y'all white folks talking about that these black folks had a disability. Now that you got white men and white women who are the future for white America hooked on drugs, now all of a sudden it's a disability. Ellen Richard? This is deep, man. This is nothing you can just see. These folks, they are here in the state of Pennsylvania, as well as, I guess, in their vision, nationally, they want to make it part of the American Disabilities Act, because white folks is hooked on drugs. Now they can qualify to be supported under the American Disabilities Act. I said, I'll be damned. Wow.
And the black politicians that are third in rank or in the Senate and possibly could be considered as a vice president, hopeful, they are silent, and they're silent. You know, I'm stuck on this, y'all, and I apologize, because I think where we're off is that we are focusing too much on what I call a beauty show. It ain't about Biden, and it ain't about Trump. It's about the policy and the people and the organizing on the ground for the type of politicians that we would put in office that will have some courage and conviction about the policy that they're going to, even if they're going to have to, you know, do this here trading and negotiating to get. But right now, you don't hear anybody say anything. So when you give the example, what black folks at that point, I heard black people on the ground saying, lock them up. They used older people. Older people were afraid in the neighborhood because crack was being sold. And they were making money off of them.
And then they eventually locked all of them up, took all the money back, and now look at the community. It's mm-hmm. being, the wealth has changed from where those houses was cheap houses to now they're expensive. Even if it ain't the houses, the land itself. And we call it gentrification. That's but right. We didn't put those people in office.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're right. You're absolutely right, Brother Richard. And see, Brother Richard, again, see, this is why I tell people, when you look at this election right now, see, about Bernie Sanders, it's not so much that I'm so much in love with Bernie Sanders, but what Bernie is saying is what these Negroes should be saying. You're talking about wealth inequality, right. a total distribution of the wealth. This is what these Negroes should be saying. You know what I mean? It should be a white man just saying it. They should be saying it, but they're not saying these things. So the fact that I'm glad Bernie's saying it, because whether Bernie could deliver or not is not the issue for me. The issue is that these Negroes should be taking up the mantle. They should be saying, they know what the time it is. Like I said, why do we always have to keep on, laying on these Negroes to do what we elect them to do, like this stuff. Why is these Negroes play dumb all the time? Well, we don't have a black agenda, you know. And I find it so ironic now that I heard some of the Negroes now saying, well, you know, we need to go to Biden or Bernie with a black agenda. But why didn't some same Negroes come with I remember vividly, because I remember I was good in the arguments with these Negroes on the terrestrial station. When I was saying about having a black agenda for to take to Obama, the Negroes were arguing me down on WRD. Well, you can't expect him to do stuff. For black people, he's not a president for black people. He's the president for everybody. Mm-hmm. And when Elliot played that clip the other week with Dr. Claude Edison, said that everybody else getting off to look out for their own, but it's only the Negro politician that get in there with that, well, I got to do for everybody. And stupid Negroes go for that nonsense. Well, he got to do for everybody. But yet Obama got in office with 90% of the black vote both times. And yet, again, we put him first, he puts us last. He go out of his way to placate gays, the LGBT, Jews, everybody but our people and stuff, the Latinos, everybody except our people, and Negroes happy with it because they got that symbolism of the so-called first black president and stuff like that. But yeah, everybody getting their agendas moving forward except us, and we don't want to vote for him strong. And it's going to be no different with Joe Biden. If he become the nominee, Joe Biden going to look out for Israel. He going to look out for everybody else, gays, neighbors, except the Negroes. And Negroes going to be so silly and stuff. They're going, because of Negroes like Clyburn and all them, they're going to once again get duped again. I mean, how long are we going to keep going being sucker like that? You running out here, you know, going out of your way, giving these people your support, and you're getting absolutely nothing for your vote. Like Malcolm say, they every other legislation comes up, they get it out of the way, and now they come to you. Now they come to you. I mean, we just keep going for this okie doke every time. And when you talk about these, and I'm glad, Richard, you talk about these white evangelicals, the hypocrisy among them. And it's nothing new with them. I remember back in the 1960s when they was bombing churches, not only the church in Alabama where the four little princesses died, but other churches that was bombed by these white terrorists throughout the South. Dr. King admonished the white clergy back then. He jumped on people like Billy Graham and Pat, whatever his name is, all these so-called white, he got on them because these men, supposed to be Christian men, so-called men of the Bible, they was absolutely silent while their fellow black Christian churches was being terrorized by these white thugs in uniform and these white hoods and stuff, and these so-called Klansmen, where these white Klansmen would call themselves so-called Christians that believe in the Bible, but yet they throwing bombs in the churches, killing four little black girls while they prepare for Sunday school, and they got the audacity to call themselves Christians. Well, you fast forward to 2015 in South Carolina. Again, the mindset hasn't changed about these white evangelicals. When that thug went to that church in Charleston and killed all those white folks who welcomed them in doing Bible prayer, Bible study, and Bible prayer. Now, I didn't hear, and I swear to God, my hand before I lie on the Quran, I'm telling you what I know. I didn't hear one white evangelical condemn this thug for what he did. I didn't hear one white church member and stuff come out and offer any bit of sympathy for the black community, the black Christian community and stuff. Even that so-called Word Network, all them where all the Billy Grahams and the Jimmy Swaggers, I didn't hear not one of them gave any word. They didn't even mention that. It act like it never happened. And I was so outraged, Elliot. I'll tell you what I did. I called the white Christian show that with these two, with a white man, I can't think of their name. They used to be on Fox 29. They all they used to do get up there every week on their show on Sunday night and just beat up on Muslims, beat up on the Bible, beat up on black people. And they, if somebody even looked at a white Christian the wrong way, they had something to say. I caught up. I got the station. I caught up and stuff a week after this massacre in South Carolina. And I said, when is this? I said, when is this so-called white man and white woman who saying they claim they love the Bible and they love Jesus? I said, when is they going to condemn what happened in South Carolina when their fellow black Christians and stuff got slaughtered by this thug and stuff? And the white lady says, sir, they haven't got around, but they will. Elliot, if they mention that, I got land down in Florida to sell you. They didn't mention it at one time, and I called back again for the second time, and the white lady said, well, you got to give them time. I said, time? I said, miss, about damn whole month them passed since this killing. When is they going to say anything? Never said a word. You know what I mean? Never, not one word of prayer, not word of sympathy, Elliot, for the people, and not one ounce of condemnation for this white terrorist that did that. You know what I mean? See, I mean, again, now, it shows our people time and time again. These are, and mind you now, these are the same white evangelicals that support Donald Trump and his ilk.
Yeah.
See, I mean, again, I don't know when we're going to get it, bro. I don't know when we're going to realize these people don't give a damn about our humanity. They don't care.
You know what our great friend, Brother Rob, used to say?
Mm-hmm.
Black folks ain't going to get it till they get it.
Until they get it. And that's real.
Brother Rob had the 100.
And they ain't going to get it till they get it. I mean, how many more examples do you need and stuff, man? I mean, see, it'd be one thing. You can make a case, and even though it still wouldn't be right, you can make a case if these was Muslims, if this white fella went to a mosque and slaughtered Muslims. But he slaughtered fellow black Christians. And these white folks, they say they're white evangelicals. They say they love Jesus. They love their Christian brothers and sisters around the world, whether they black, white, Asian, Latino, they all in the body of Christ. This is what these are. We love them all. But why the hell do you love them all? Why do you say anything else, any words of support for your fellow black Christians who got slaughtered at the hands of one of your own white thugs? Why didn't y'all say anything? Y'all really care. Why didn't you say anything? I mean, the proof, as they say, the proof is in the pudding, bro. You know what I mean? The proof is in the pudding. Again, like you say, like you quoted Brother Rob, Brother Elliot, we ain't going to get it till we get it. I mean, I don't know how many more examples we need. So I'll close on this note. Like I said, we sitting back here as we get close to November. The Negroes now, they throwing their hand in the basket for Joe Biden. And I like what Brother X called him yesterday on Dr. Mecca's show. Brother X referred to Joe Biden as Jim Crow Joe. That's Brother X's name, Jim Crow Joe. Couldn't came up with a better name for this guy, man. He going to kick black people right. Excuse my language, Ellen Richard. He going to kick these niggas square up their ass. I'm just going to tell you straight up. He can't wait to do it to them, but he going to sock it to them too. With the old with the girl, the white girl, actually the sock it to me girl. Well, Joe Biden going to sock it to these niggas. He can't wait to sock it to them too. But I don't think he going to get a chance. I don't think he going to beat Trump. But for some strange way, he'd happen to win. He going to kick these niggas square up their ass. Make no mistake about it, bro. It's going to be a case like Malcolm said. You put them first, and he going to sure as hell put you last. And that's the bottom line. We just don't learn. Like I said, and niggas like Jim Clyburn on his ilk, long as Biden get them niggas a little cabinet position, a couple of crumbs off the master's table, they happy. Long as they keep on misleading black people and they can get the little crumbs, they okay. Because at the end of the day, them niggas living large. Last point, Ellen Richard, to show you my point right here in the city of Philadelphia, as city council president, a friend of mine's ran into him. Guess we ran into him yesterday over at the grocery store called Wegman in Cherry Hill. He was coming in the grocery store over there with I guess his girlfriend or wife, whatever. I guess his lady friend or whatever. It's just been rumored for years that.